Blog Talk Radio.
Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Welcome into another edition of Next Fan Up with Pod Vader and the super fans. My name is Adam Bring It All, and I am the super fan for the Detroit Lions. Today, I am joined by the Chicago Bears super fan, Tom Shannon. How are you, Tom?
What's up, Adam?
Nice talk to you again. How's life treating you?
Pretty poorly. Thanks for asking.
that's a subject for another forum, I see. Brian Slattery, the Green Bay Packers super fan. How are you, Brian?
I'm good. How about you, Adam? Thanks for hosting.
Absolutely. Couldn't pass up this opportunity. And the Minnesota Vikings superfan Davey Randa will join us a little bit later as the show goes on. As always, we encourage any and all fan interaction. Feel free to email us at nextfanup@gmail.com. We're begging to be interactive with anybody that'll listen. Twitter at NFU Podcast and Facebook, facebook.com/NFU Podcast. We strive for this to be interactive. This is by the fans for the fans. So please get at us. We are happy to talk to you. Well, if you gentlemen don't disagree, let's dive right in. Looking at the news of the day, Tom, we'll go ahead and start with you. Anything you want to touch on that's relevant in Chicagoland?
Now, there isn't a whole lot going on. Off-season workouts have just started. Matt Forte didn't show up. That's not a terribly big surprise. His contract is up after 2015, and I think he'd like an extension. He's 30 years old. I don't think he's going to get one. But and there was a time when this would have driven me bananas as a fan, and I can remember the last time Forte pulled this. I was quite upset. But now I guess maybe I've matured a little bit and I can sort of see, they're just voluntary workouts. The mandatory camp isn't until it's tomorrow. So literally as we release this, we'll be finding out whether he shows up for that. But I think most people expect him to show up for that. With a new offense being installed, he's pretty much a team guy. And I'd be surprised if he wasn't there tomorrow. Another no-show was Martellus Bennett, tight end, pretty good tight end. This is a little bit of a different story. He signed a new contract in March 2013. He's still in the middle of it. It averages about $5 million a year, so it's not a bad deal. And my guess is that Bennett's pretty much just not showing up because he doesn't want to show up. I think he figures voluntary means voluntary, and I don't feel like showing up, so I'm not going to show up. And this is very unfortunate, actually. He was a problem last year on this team. I'm sure you guys are aware that the Bears locker room wasn't the best, to say the least. Let's just say that there wasn't a lot of spirit de corps, or however you pronounce that. And Brandon Marshall caught a lot of flack for that. I'm not sure how deserved it was, but there's no doubt Bennett was a little bit of that. He's not what you'd call a hustle player. There was a lot of talk last summer about how they'd tell him to run and he'd purposely walk with a strut back to the huddle and challenge coaches, and that set of coaches was not up to the challenge, apparently. They did eventually send him home after he wrestled one of the cornerbacks to the ground, Kyle Fuller, who's a first-round pick. So he's been in trouble, and apparently not showing up to the voluntary camp, I'd say he didn't learn much from that. And my guess is that we're headed for more trouble, and this dates back to his years with the Cowboys. I don't know if you guys remember when the Cowboys won Hard Knocks, but that was Bennett's rookie year. And they kept talking about how immature he was and how he had to grow up and how they had to ride him. And you could see him mugging for the camera. They'd give him crap, and then he'd turn around looking at the camera and mug, not very repentant. So this is not new for him. He is a problem child. And despite his talent, I would not be a bit surprised if he's somewhere else in 2016. This is a very bad sign with a brand new offense being installed that he's not showing up. Other than that, there isn't really much going on with the Bears' offseason workout program. Kyle Long's on the record. He likes the new coaches. He said they're, quote, like older versions of us, unquote. And what he means by that is he sees John Fox in the weight room. He's lifting literally right next to Kyle Long, shooting crap at him. You know what I mean? And apparently they like that. They think that the new coaching staff is really going to be quite an improvement. And I would have to agree. At least I hope so.
Very interesting. That's fascinating to look at. And I know every time you look at somebody skipping workouts, there seems to be two different kinds. There's I know we used to face this all the time with Sue. He would not show up, but the reasoning he gave was, well, I can do better on my own. Why would I come to you? He had his own workout regimen. So he wasn't there, but you knew he was putting the work in. Do you get the same impression of these guys? Like, they're not there, but you know they're putting the work in to where they're going to be ready come the mandatory stuff?
I would bet a dollar to a donut that Matt Forte is putting in the work. I like him. He's an all pro. I mean, he really is. He's a great guy. Ideal teammate. Martellus Bennett, I'm not so sure. You know, I would not be a bit surprised if he didn't show up to the mandatory minicamp and didn't know the plays. You know, I don't know how out of shape he'll be, but I'll bet it won't be tip top. He's just the kind of guy that might not put the work in. He might, but he might not. And by the way, the timing of that mandatory camp is really interesting. It's actually coming before the draft, which I think is interesting because I think the coaching staff and the general manager want to see these guys hit the grass before the draft so that they'll have a better idea of what they got. And it might literally make a difference in terms of who they choose. Because if they're surprised and they decide that some of these players, for instance, can't make the transition to the 3-4, or you know they aren't quite what they look like on video, they could walk back into the draft room, shuffle a few things around at the last minute. It wouldn't be at all surprising, based upon what they see over the next couple of days.
Sure, that's a really good point, Brian. How about you? Any news coming out of Packerland this time of year?
Not a whole lot of news. This is not surprisingly to most educated fans. This is not the time of year that you get a lot of news out of 1265 Lombardi Ave. They're always very, very hush-hush about the draft, and the reporters up here are all tongue-in-cheek about it. Todd Thompson does a pre-draft press conference where he basically says nothing for 45 minutes. So I don't have a whole lot to report on, but just I wanted to touch on something that the Packers do as it relates to the voluntary workouts. Traditionally, we've had pretty good attendance. I can't think of anybody in recent years that has skipped out, but some of that might have to do with the way that we structure our contracts. So I know there was an article that came out recently by Rob Domofsky on ESPN. That said that we, as the Packers, paid out more in workout bonuses than any other team. So I don't know if that says something about the psyche of the players that we draft or something about the attractiveness or perhaps lack of attractiveness of hanging out in Green Bay in April. But yeah, that's one of the things that we've done that have kind of encouraged players to come to our voluntary workouts, is kind of tied some of their compensation to it.
It's pretty much both problem, right?
I'm sorry?
I mean, it's pretty much both probably, right? You're drafting the right kind of players and you're offering the bonuses and the combination works.
Yeah, I would tend to think so. There's the coaches up here talk about Packer people. Kind of we look for those high character guys, want to work out, want to be in Green Bay. So it is kind of a competitive disadvantage coming from the frozen tundra because a lot of the college and free agent opportunities that we might have might not be so excited about that, but typically once they get ingrained in the culture, they tend to think that they'd rather not play anywhere else.
You know,
sure. And it is worth noting that this time of year, if you hear nothing from your team, 9 times out of 10, that's a good thing. I mean,
almost nothing. Yeah.
if you're hearing anything about people, it's generally not good. Maybe that goes back to that workout bonus thing. Maybe they think if they can keep guys in the area, you know, there's only so much trouble you can get in Green Bay,
as opposed to going back home. That we tested last year when we picked up Colt Lyerla in the draft, who had some of the larger, more dark red check marks or red flags against him as kind of being a character concern. Thinking that maybe get him into Green Bay where there's nothing going on anyways. Maybe there's a little bit less temptation for him to get into trouble, but that didn't seem to faze him. He was able to find his way into some trouble regardless of the Green Bay situation. The only thing I can think of as far as news goes, and it's a little bit old now, but McCarthy had given up play calling duties. He kind of turned those over to our offensive coordinator, Tom Clements, who doesn't have any experience with it. And I don't know, from me personally, I think it's kind of an overreaction from the conservative nature of our play calling at the end of the NFC championship game. I look at this as kind of a big overreaction. I think play calling is some of what Mike McCarthy does best. And I'm a little bit concerned that when you take what he does best, and I get that he's going to be spending more of his attention on special teams, which are an issue in their own right. My concern is that there's the improvement that we see in special teams is not enough to make up for the loss we see in the play calling. So that's about kind of the only news that we've had recently. We did fire our special teams coordinator, which I was pretty excited about. He was it was a long overdue firing. I think he was fairly good friends with Mike McCarthy dating back to some of their days in college at Pitt. So I was a little concerned that maybe he was going to hang on to him just as a bit of a, hey, here's a little bone I can throw your way. But I was happy to see that we righted that ship and we're able to kind of proceed with hopefully an improved special teams coordinator.
I kind of like the fact that McCarthy is relinquishing the play calling duties, and I'll tell you why. First of all, Tom Clements might very well be ready. I mean, the Bears tried to get him as an offensive coordinator. Must have been 3 or 4 years ago.
A couple years ago, yeah, I remember.
They denied permission, which I don't blame them within the division especially. But, yeah, you got to try. But he might be ready. And, you know, I look around at the head coaches in the league, and I think the best ones are often really the CEO types that coach the coaches. I kind of think that might be what Belichick does. I don't think, you know, I don't see him there calling plays. You know, but a lot of these coaches, he takes them on. Some of them are guys I never heard of before, and they end up being head coaching candidates in their own right because, you know, Belichick is there sort of like overseeing the whole operation without getting into the nitty-gritty details because he knows that you can trust a guy like Tom Clements to come up with a decent game plan. And it's not like he's not going to be involved at all, right? So I kind of like it. I think his points are really well taken. I know you brought up the special teams thing. But the fact of the matter is, you know, there was obviously something wrong with that room last year. And like he said, if I'm sitting in the back of it, there's going to be a different culture there, and there's probably going to be a different culture everywhere if he can turn up anywhere at any time. So I kind of like it. You're right. You know, you got to kind of wait and see how it works out. And I know it's a new play caller, and, you know, especially a guy who hasn't done it before, it can be a real problem. I was reading the other day about somebody, I think it was Sean Payton, was commenting about his first year taking over play calling. And he said it was really a shock. He was with Fossil at the time. And he actually had the duties taken away from him. And he had to learn to plan better during the week and think about every situation that might come up. But it was all in the preparation. And my guess is that Clemens will learn that pretty quick, especially if he's got McCarthy to lean on. So I wouldn't worry about it too much. I think it's going to be really interesting. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I mean, I hope you're right, Tom. Obviously, I would love for Tom Clements to come in and be a better play caller than Mike McCarthy. And I see your point to a certain extent. I will say that one of McCarthy's limitations, as I see it, is he's been really bad with time management and with challenges. You know, some of the things that he's challenged in the past. I think he's got one of the lower success rates of you know, getting calls to go his way that he challenges. So maybe by removing some of the play calling duties, there's a little bit less pressure on him to get the next play ready. But instead of trying to figure out, well, is this something we should challenge? Is this something we shouldn't? So I think there's definitely room for growth for everyone. But I do, you know, we were so close last year. I'm just a little bit nervous about rocking the boat too much. And I think this is one of those things that we're going to have to wait and see how it plays out. And I'll be watching that very closely for the first half of the year.
Very nice, gentlemen. We actually are now being joined by our Minnesota superfan, Davey Randa. Davey, do we have you?
Earth to Davey.
I know Davey said he was struggling with his internet connection a little bit, so no worries. We will check back with Davey momentarily. As far as looking at any news that's going on in Allen Park for the Lions, the most recent thing, and perhaps one of the most jarring things that might be happening right before the draft, is the fact that we are now down to a whopping one viable offensive guard on the team. A player who was penciled into the right guard spot was Rodney Austin. He was kind of a workout warrior, very naturally strong, naturally talented guy. Never panned out as far as on the football field goes. Couldn't put it all together. They kept him on the practice squad for 2 or 3 years. I can't remember the number off the top of my head. He has been released. He was arrested in North Carolina for allegedly, I hate to speculate, but from everything I've read, he knocked a woman to the ground who was holding a small child and then took her phone and disabled her phone so she could not call emergency services. Jeez. So he's now facing charges including misdemeanor assault on a female, misdemeanor larceny, interference with emergency communication, and misdemeanor child abuse. Being a roster bubble guy, that's all the Lions had to hear. They cut him loose. He's, of course, spinning this all as not a big deal. Everything has been built upon too much by the woman. It's not true. And apparently the door has been left open once the legal troubles are clear and he has been, if he has been liberated of all charges, they're open to bringing him back and there's a dialogue. But like I said, going into the draft, that leaves us with one viable guard in Larry Warford, and that's a problem. So that may affect things going forward. I'll ask you guys for any comments, but please, please be gentle.
Does Rodney Austin know Ray McDonald? I think the two of them should get together. And what's the name of the WNBA players? Brittany Griner and Glory Johnson, right? Let's get them. We'll put the four of them together. We'll have a hell of a bowling team.
Oh my gosh! Just throwing elbows at everybody. All right.
Yeah, I don't have any sort of brilliant comment to make, but I'll just say that it takes a special kind of idiot to. Not only knock a woman holding a small child over, but then to take her phone away and disable it so that she can't call for help. Yeah, that's a bad dude.
Yeah, he's a genius. You guys really lost a good one there.
I know it. All right. We'll take this opportunity to try one more time to get Davey in. Let me see if we can get him here. Davey, can you hear us?
Come on, Davey. Come on, baby. You can do it.
Davey, do we have you? All right. Well, we'll go ahead and move on. We'll catch up with Davey as soon as he gets his internet squared away. He's jumping through hoops to try to get to us for this show. So we'll move right on. As every NFL fan, and I'm sure anyone who's listening to this show knows, the schedule dropped not too long ago, and it only feels fitting that we each give our take on how the schedule release went down. So let's take another trip back to Chicagoland. What are we thinking, Tom, as far as the Bears' schedule?
The Bears are starting pretty tough. The start against Green Bay, joy. That could be a good one. Of course, Green Bay killed them last year, and we're still hurting from that. There could be an advantage to that in that, it's a brand new defense. We're going to the 3-4, and the Packers won't have seen anything of it. So it's going to be brand new to them, just like me. And you could argue that there is an advantage of that. Of course, if it's also going to be brand new to the players, they're not going to show anything in the preseason. But it'll be interesting to not only be trying out new things, but also be trying them out against the consensus best team in the division. Then we have Arizona, and we're at Seattle. That sounds like a win. Oakland, at Kansas City, and at Detroit. So I look at those six games, and I think that they could easily start 1-5, and I would even say likely 2-4. And I couldn't tell you who the two teams they're going to beat are. You know, Oakland, other than that, it looks like a win. But other than that, I couldn't really say. It looks like a relatively rough start. And, you know, we're going to find out right away whether the players are tougher or not. One piece of good news, two primetime games as opposed to they've had like the maximum for like 2 years in a row. But everyone was so miserable last year because they were so bad and they fell on their face so badly on primetime that the networks finally got smart. They only put us on in primetime twice. And so that means Bear fans will be getting a little bit of sleep, which is good news for me as a guy who goes to bed early and gets up early. And the last relevant thing is we have Thanksgiving in Green Bay, which I bet Brian's really happy about, but I am not real happy about. They're retiring Brett Favre's jersey. They killed the Bears last year. I don't know what the score was at halftime, but it felt like 120-3. So, you know, Brian, it's one thing to be humiliated in your own living room, but I'll be at my parents' house surrounded by family, and that's just a whole different ballgame. Because I'm the only Bears fan. And, you know, there are some families where they kind of like bust your balls over this, right? But my family's really nice, which is almost worse. I can see my sister patting me on the back going, oh, Jay Cutler's not that bad. And it's like, it's everything you can do not to jump up to your feet and go, he's shit. They're all shit. Now leave me alone.
Hey, Tom, look, I appreciate this and everything, but as a Lions fan, don't just come in here with your one bad year and think you can take my monopoly on sucking on Thanksgiving. This has been a lifetime of pain that I've had to endure. That only recently it started to turn around, and I don't feel nauseous after my dinner.
Hey, the good news is we won't have to have Sue stomping on somebody this Thanksgiving, at least that I know of, not on camera.
If nothing else, and Dominican Sue made for interesting conversation for everyone. So get all that distant family talking about something that's not your love life is nice. All right, Brian, what are your thoughts on the Packers schedule?
I'll just start by building off of what Tom had just finished up on, which is that Thanksgiving night game. He's right. I'm super psyched for it. We played a few years back on Christmas, and it's just an awesome atmosphere. We're going to be retiring Brett Favre's number. I'm guessing it'll be the most watched Thursday game all year. You got the kind of that historic rivalry, the prodigal son returneth, and just have a lot of opportunity for people that are like you guys, probably eating Thanksgiving dinner with their families. So I imagine that there'll be a lot of people watching. Now, hopefully that means we can win. We can beat the Bears 55-14 again, which is what the score was last time. Sorry, Tom, but I have very fond memories of that game.
Yeah, you actually remember. I blocked it out.
Other than that, I would say our schedule seems fairly balanced. I would say we start out at Chicago. I'm a little bit excited that we get to play them early in the season. We're playing at Chicago, so the field shouldn't be a pile of crap just yet. And kind of contrary to what you're saying, you're saying we're not going to be able to game plan for you guys because you'll have different defensive scheme, different offensive scheme. From my perspective, I look at it as less time for you to get acclimated to the new schemes on offense and defense. So I guess you can kind of look at either side of that coin and have your own opinion. But I'm happy to open the season at Chicago. Then we go to we have our first home game against Seattle. the following week, which will be a game everybody will want to tune in for. I'm personally very much looking forward to it. I think, you know, I think when we look at how we played against Seattle the last two, three games, I think they have beaten us all three times. But there's a couple of, you know, I will call them asterisks. One of them I think is like a definitive asterisk. That's the Fail Mary game, which obviously counts as a win for them technically, but I think anybody who knows football would think differently. And then the other game I wanted to reference was the NFC Championship game last year. We mopped the floor with them for 55 minutes and then coughed it up in the last five. So I really do like our chances against them, especially at home and early in the season. So I'm excited for that. Other than that, you know, I think it's a pretty balanced balanced schedule. There is an important four-week stretch where we play just NFC North teams. So I think we'll want to be healthy and clicking on all cylinders toward the middle of the year when we have that. But other than that, I feel like it's a fairly balanced schedule. We got a bye that's in the middle of the season, which is nice. And I'm very much looking forward to watching us this upcoming season.
Brian, very nice. You brought up the field in Chicago. Would you rather that it was artificial turf?
Well, I guess it depends. Is it the old AstroTurf like you'd find in Minnesota, the Metrodome in prior years, or are we talking about the new age field turf?
Ideally, they'd like what's in Green Bay, which I think is a hybrid, but they can't do that at Soldier Field because it's used to host other events. And so they said that the field will get torn up and they can't maintain it. So it's basically got to be all artificial turf of some type that, you know, where they can have other events on it. I mean, ideally, you'd like for it to be the hybrid turf, but they can't do that. So, you know, as the players are like even split on it, it's really interesting to read the articles on it. In Pittsburgh, they've been talking about it for years and years. And one time they sent a reporter in there to ask the players about it. And one of the players, I can't remember who it was, went all around the locker room and stood over them and made them all say they wanted natural grass, even though Pittsburgh's arguably worse than Chicago. So it's kind of an interesting question, and it's been raging here for years and years, what they should do.
Isn't it managed by the Parks Department? It's kind of like a cost. I don't know if that's true or not. That's just a rumor that I've heard up here. But
they say they'll pay for it depending upon what the Bears decide. And the Bears keep saying, well, we're still looking into it. We're doing research.
Yeah.
And you know, no decision's been made. And yeah, I know it's probably not a particularly easy decision. They've softened up these turf fields quite a bit, but I think you still get like your cleats caught in it or something like that. And you end up twisting a knee. It can be a fairly serious thing. So I really can't say. I wonder if they shouldn't poll the players and just tell them it's a secret ballot vote and that's what we'll do.
Yeah. My guess, like if getting back to your original question, would I rather have it be the AstroTurf in the traditional sense or the 100% grass? I would say that if you can play them early enough, I'd prefer the grass. But if it's later in the season, after 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks that they played on it, I'm thinking, man, the consistency you'd get with AstroTurf would be a lot easier to plan for than the natural grass.
We'll talk to them about subbing in at game 8 every year, and we'll see how they feel about that.
Right.
I don't think it's going to go nice.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure this is a debate that's going to rage on for quite some time. There's so many different takes on it, whether it takes away from the game, if you get rid of the natural turf, there's lots of different takes. But, Brian, if you're all set, I think we now have Davey in on the phone. Davey, do we have you now?
I think we do. Can you hear me?
We can. How you doing, Davey?
Yay! Ow, my ace.
All right. Nice. Sorry about that, guys. I caught pieces of the beginning here. I think I'm all caught up, though.
All right, Davey. Right now, we're looking at our schedules since they were just recently relieved. What are your early takes on the Viking schedules this season?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it really sucks to have 5 preseason games. That's the biggest take. We're in the Hall of Fame game against Pittsburgh, which is fun. When you get to see a little bit early football, you get all excited for it, and then you realize that there's 4 preseason games left. And it's a big opportunity for everybody to get hurt, and that's pretty much it. And it's a long haul during the preseason. Other than that, you know, for us, the schedule, I mean, it's kind of what you guys were all just hitting on. There's nothing, it's kind of there's nothing super notable about it. You know, we open up against San Francisco, which they're kind of falling apart all over the map, although we're not exactly a juggernaut of the NFC North, so that's a wild card. So we open up at home against the Lions, which, since I grew up with the Lions being a pathetic team, I can't get it out of my head that that should be an easy game, even though it's not.
So who knows? I understand how that goes.
I'm sure other people have that opinion about the Vikings. Yeah. So I'm working on adjusting my expectations, but for some reason I keep thinking it should be easy, even though I know in my brain that it's not.
All right, and
you guys have Davey, kind of an early. Sorry, Davey, sorry, you have kind of an early bye. Has anybody ever said anything about that in terms of the schedule? Because that usually most people think that kind of stinks to have it too early.
Yeah, I mean, my take on that is that it does stink unless you start off and need that bye week to adjust, which is looking like we might need that considering we're going to be at Denver against San Diego, against Lions, who are probably, going to be a pretty formidable foe here early on. So, you know, if you're floundering early on in the season and need that week to kind of regroup and adjust, especially with a long preseason, it might be beneficial to us to have it that early, to be honest. I know that a lot of people don't like that, but, you know, it kind of falls more in the middle of things if you're kind of looking at the schedule on a page than you think. So it's not so bad if you take preseason into account and look at it in terms of this bye week is more or less, you know, just a week or two before the pure middle of the season, if you choose to count preseason.
Sure. Davey, one question I have for you, and correct me if I'm wrong, but with the construction going on in Minnesota, you guys are now an outdoor team, correct?
That's right. We're at the Gopher Stadium, TCF Bank. It's we're at the bank. It's cool to be outside, but it's a little cold.
I can imagine.
Not that we're going to get any sympathy from the rest of the NFC North, but that's it's a little brisk out there.
I was going to ask, do you see this impacting your team at all? I know that was a huge knock on Teddy Bridgewater, whether it was warranted or not coming out. Oh, he's got small hands. He's not going to be able to hold the ball when it's cold. do you see that affecting the play of your team at all?
So, I mean, the answer is definitely, of course, it'll impact us. It'd be impossible for it not to. I think, though, that it could help a lot. Yeah, that was a big knock on Teddy coming out, but that's kind of a knock on a lot of quarterbacks coming out that doesn't always prove to be true. You know,
hey, Johnny Manziel has big hands.
Exactly, right?
He's going to be great.
Exactly. Exactly. So I'm not sure how useful of the, you know, those predictions always are. I mean, Teddy fell in the draft for a lot of reasons, and now I'm thrilled to have him. So, you know, if people were worried about his ability to play in the cold, I'm hopeful that he'll just take that as a challenge like he seems to have with everything else and jump to it. I think it can help us, though, in terms of I feel like we have a solid defense to be able to play in the cold like that. We have a good pass rush, things like that that can kind of help in weather like this. Overall, do I think it's going to make a big impact on the season? I don't. I don't think it's going to be a huge deal. You know, it's kind of those end of year games that are going to matter. And frankly, we're playing against NFC North teams that are used to it.
Yeah. Well, I can still remember one year at Soldier Field. There's one side of that field that's colder than the other. That's the visiting team side, naturally. And they were playing the Falcons, and Michael Vick came in here, and the Falcons lost that game before the kickoff. You could just tell those guys were freezing cold. And Vic, I swear, he'd go out three quick downs as fast as he could. He'd run back to the bench, put that coat on, and sit down. He could not wait. They were done before that game started. And I know it's colder up there than it is at Soldier Field, debatably. So I think
it is, but we get less wind from we don't have that lake whipping the wind off of it. And then on the 20th of December, we play Chicago. So, you know, that's kind of the big one that will, you know, hopefully matter for us. You know, who knows? And then we play New York after that on the 27th. So the Giants, not the Jets. And we'll see, you know, if that's going to matter at all in this division. It's, you know, as a Vikings fan, we can only remain hopeful that we can keep our head above water as long as possible. So we'll see.
Speaking of Teddy in the cold, didn't you guys get caught warming balls up on the sideline last year? And I'd kind of like to know why the Patriots are being picked on for deflating balls, but the Vikings seem to get off scot-free here. Do you think you should get the same punishment they do?
It's a great question. My answer, which I'm not sure would be the popular one, is that we should all get punished for it, right? I think the level of punishment should probably be a little different for the Patriots, considering they've already been part of the biggest cheating scandal out there that I recall. So kind of second offender issue there. But sure, if it comes back that we were breaking the rules, then definitely should fall in line with that. I think if for nothing else, I think it's just one of those, even if it's not a big deal, you might as well keep everybody in line that way. You know, I don't know. I mean, a lot of people go with the argument of, oh, how much does that really matter? You know, does it really change the game? Well, if it doesn't change the game, then why are they doing it?
And why is there
a rule? Let me play devil's advocate here. I'm not sure. I don't know the NFL rule book, and this may or may not be a rule, but I think there are some specific requirements that the ball be inflated to a certain amount. There's a range in there. I'm not sure that there is a range for what temperature the ball should be. So I'll stick up for the Vikings a little bit here.
I think that could be the case for why they haven't gotten a formal punishment, and you might be right, because I think you're right that that's the difference between these two cases, whether or not, and you know, we can all go in a zillion directions with temperature affecting the inflation and all the science behind it, and we all know that that's, Bill Nye can weigh in some other time, like we've seen on the news and everything like that, but I think that you're probably right, that that's why it might not be, the Vikings getting punished for this, because it might not be a formal rule. If it is a formal rule, though, then, send us the punishment the same way the Pats should probably get punished. I'm not sure either team will, based on what's kind of fallen down this line, but who knows? I guess we'll have to see.
Well, there's obviously...
Go ahead, sir.
There's obviously a rule against it, right? I mean, it may not say you can't warm it up to a specific temperature other than that, but I'm sure, I don't know the rule book either, but I know that they got fined for it, right? I mean, you wouldn't get fined for it unless there was a rule against it. So I'm sure.
Yeah, and I guess it's a matter of is that fine the kind of set punishment, or is that fine the first step, and then there's an investigation to see how much further it went, and is there more coming or not? And to that, I honestly don't know. They've actually talked about this quite a bit on Minnesota Sports Radio, and people don't. Nobody seems to really know the answer, which I suppose is kind of a wider NFL problem. That should be something I think that people understand, and then it would make these debates a little easier, right? Then people would kind of understand what's going on with the Patriots, with the Vikings, with all these other teams that have these kind of seemingly small infractions that no one quite understands why they're getting punished or if they should, and some people feel strongly that they should and others feel strongly that they shouldn't. It'd be easier with some transparency.
Sure, absolutely. And Davey, now that we have you, I can't let you get away without asking you what's your feelings, what are you hearing, what's going on with Adrian Peterson?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the A topic, at least from my perspective in the whole division. He's, got to be one of the biggest names that we've got up here, and no one knows what's going on exactly. The feeling in Minnesota is that, at least from the fan side, is that he and his camp probably want out. Rick Spielman, our GM, and everybody on the Vikings camp, they're not going to let him go unless they get a significant haul. And lately what I can surmise is that we're probably not going to get the haul that they want, which means he'll probably either be playing for us or nobody. That's the vibe that we get as of kind of today. Now, having said that, that was what the Vikings were saying about Percy Harvin. They were saying, we're not trading him, we're not trading him, we're not trading him, and then we went and traded him. So it's pretty hard to, Rick Spielman's not exactly somebody that shows his cards. He's pretty good about lying constantly. So I'm pretty sure that that's what he's doing now too, which makes it almost impossible to speculate on this. It's my guess though that they're trying to get a first round pick for Peterson and that no one's going to do it. He's a 30-year-old running back. He's been amazing. He's, you know, putting all of the legal troubles aside, because that's a debate for, you know, an entirely different podcast. He's been out of football for a year. He's 30 years old. And even though the last time he touched the ball, he was great, who knows how much more he's got left in him on a, you know, an extremely expensive contract. So it's going to be tough to move him for something significant. And at that point, you might as well keep him. He puts butts in the seats. You know, he's going to help Teddy in terms of development. So I think that they're not going to move him unless they get something fairly significant.
Yeah, I that's what I'm thinking as well.
Having said that, though, I would like to see him moved. don't get me wrong. I've loved having him on our team. I love watching him. He's despite his legal troubles, you know, I was happy to see him get, you know, appropriately punished. I think I'm not a fan of what he did or anything like that, but I, you know, don't want, you know, somebody or anybody to get, you know, overly punished. But I'm more than happy to move on from any player when they get to be too expensive, too old. You know, he had the best season of any running back, pretty much in NFL history, arguably. And what did that get us? It got us kicked out of the playoffs in the first round by the Packers. So sure. I'm not sure it really matters to have a great running back. You need a quarterback. So hopefully Teddy's the future.
Absolutely. Well, in the interest of moving things along, I'll just give a couple quick takes here on the Lions schedule. The murderer's row in the beginning, Tom, I'm right there with you. It's absolutely brutal. Start off at the Chargers, at the Vikings, home versus the Broncos, then back out to Seattle, and then home to Cardinals. Ouch. Hopefully that'll get us out. But like you said, you know, I could easily see 1-4 coming out of that. I guess if you want to look for stuff, you know, I don't even find a whole lot of positives in it. It's just rough. Just batting down the hatches. It's a hurricane. Here we go. We have four primetime games, which is interesting. That's not counting the 9:30 a.m. London game, which, by the way, which is fantastic as a fan. I can't think of a better way to start the day. Speaking for anyone in the West Coast who has to wake up to 6:30. But I think that's a fantastic way to start the day. And then of course, as a Lions fan, getting the tar kicked out of me for so long, my first look is, where is the at Packers game? That's always the one that hurts. Going to Lambeau. Please don't be in December. Please be favorable looking up to it. I like the fact that it's home versus Vikings. Then we go to London, get that extra long bye week, being that's a little bit longer, and then we come back and play at Packers. So we got to go to Lambeau. It's part of the division. But it sets up fairly well to where we might have a chance, where we haven't won in,
22 years? Or is it 23?
It's painful, and I try to block it out. But I knew you guys would know. So.
Yeah, I know. I always get nervous, too, because every time we play them, they always bring up that stat, and it's like, you're just asking for it. It's going to happen one of these years, obviously. You can't go on infinitely just beating the Lions at home every year. So I'm sure it'll happen eventually. And I'm just, it's one of those things that I always kind of shudder a little bit when I hear the media types talking about the streak.
Then there'll be 1-22 and it'll be completely different story, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's like it never happened. 1-0, it's all that matters. All right. Being that we're a little bit up against it, guys, we were going to talk about the status of the teams. How'd we do in free agency? Gains, losses, coaching, scheme changes, all that good stuff. Let's try to give a condensed 5-minute or so version. We'll start with Tom. What do you think? How'd you guys do in the offseason?
Everything's new. What's going on with the Packers? We have a new GM, Ryan Pace. He says he's 37. He looks 22. And I think his first goal for the draft will be to draft someone younger than he is. John Fox is the new head coach. We were darn lucky to pick him up. That's quite an improvement from my point of view. If for no other reason than because he can assemble a staff, which is something Lovie Smith never could seem to do. He's got Adam Gase as his offensive coordinator. Couldn't do a lot better there and could not do better than Vic Fangio as a defensive coordinator. With San Francisco, he gave Green Bay a rough time. Doesn't have the talent here for that. But nevertheless, when they suck against Green Bay, it won't be because of him. he's going to move him on to a 3-4 defensive scheme. Whether they're actually prepared for that is a little bit of a tough question that I know Brian wants to ask later, so I won't get into it too much. But let's just say they lack depth. They have bodies there, but they really don't have a lot of depth to fill all the positions. So that's going to be a rough transition, I'm going to guess. Hard to say what's going to happen with the offense. Gase always talks about adjusting to his talent, so it's really hard to say what he's going to do. They're talking about rolling Cutler out more. They've been talking about that for years and years. And he's run through offensive coordinators here like crap through a goose. So I don't have a lot of hope for that, but I do have a lot of hope that the offense will be a little bit better under him. I would say there'll be some changes to the offensive line in terms of the blocking scheme. I know they did a little bit of zone blocking in Denver. This will be our first exposure to that. In Chicago, I think they're going to mix it up, but I'm really looking forward to seeing what they do there. It's going to be interesting to watch. In terms of free agent gains, lots and lots of one-year contracts. Sam Ancho is going to be one pass rush linebacker. Pernell McPhee was the big acquisition over the winter. They're counting on him to up his game. He showed a lot of promise in Baltimore. They signed Antrell Roll. He's going to be their free safety. I don't have a lot of hope for that. I'll talk a little bit about that when we talk about needs for the draft. But let's just say I think he's lost some range based upon what I saw of him with the Giants. And I was unimpressed with that acquisition, not nearly as much as the Bears seem to be. They lost Chris Conte, if you want to call that a loss. They lost Charles Tillman. That is a loss. He's with Carolina now. He was getting up there in age. They say better lose a guy a year too early than a year too late. That was the case here. He's been injured 2 years in a row. He missed most of last year with the same torn triceps that he had the year before. So that pretty much doomed him. We pretty much all knew he was going to move along. Lance Briggs is gone. You guys might say that's a great loss. I saw his antics here. They hurt the team off the field, and I am personally glad to see him go. And Stephen Pye is gone. That is a loss, but he was more a three-technique defensive tackle, and you could argue there wasn't a good position for him in the 3-4. He'd have been a defensive end. It would have been the first time playing it. It would have been a waste of his talents. They re-signed Jimmy Clausen, Sherrick McManus, and Dante Rosario. None of those mean anything. They're pretty much Jags. Although I do have hope for Clausen. He did start one game last year after a particularly disastrous performance by Cutler against New Orleans, where he really looked bad. He did not do that bad to my eye. There's talk here. He could supply some legitimate competition with Cutler. I don't believe that, but I do believe he's a legitimate alternative if Cutler falls on his face again this year. The Bears literally need everything. You can go down every position, offense and defense, and make a case that they could draft that position and you wouldn't get an argument from me. Even positions that are filled like running back with Matt Forte. John Fox has traditionally gone with running backs by committee. Forte's in the last year of his contract. He's 30 years old. Even at running back, they could use somebody. Wide receiver, offensive line, they need a right tackle. They need defensive line help. They've got bodies there, but basically one body at every position to my eye, and then everything is question marks. Same thing at linebacker, same thing at cornerback, same thing at safety, where I don't even think they have a free safety. So in my opinion, in the draft, they should draft the best available in every round, regardless of position. They need it. The only thing they may want to reach for, if they're really serious about Cutler and not being too thrilled with him as a starter, they may have to reach for a quarterback of the future that could sit behind him for a year and be ready to start next year or the year after. But beyond that, best available in every round, every position. That's my position on the draft. So there's no excuse for them not to have a good draft. They are not looking, in my opinion, they should not be looking for specific positions. It should be the best talent all the way around.
Very well done, Tom. Brian, your Packers, always very active in this phase of the season. How'd they do?
Right, so I'm not sure what this free agency is that you guys all speak of. I'm pretty sure there's only one phase of player procurement, and that is the draft. So all seriousness aside, where Tom's everything is new comment comes into play, in Green Bay, everything is pretty much the same. We're returning all 11 starters on offense and their key backups from last year, which is the first time I can say that in a long time. Also, we're the only team in the league who hasn't signed an outside free agent, which is, you know, more or less par for the course. Ted Thompson always says it's his preference to re-sign his own guys. And I think there's actually only a couple of guys on the roster who have ever played a snap for someone besides the Packers. So it's a very homegrown team, and there's obviously a lot of pressure on all of the draft Knicks and Ted to hit another draft out of the park. So gains and losses, there's no gains really. Everything's pretty much the same from last year. But as far as losses go, we've actually had a lot of defensive turnover. You know, we've lost Tremont Williams, Devon House at the defensive back position, AJ Hawk, Brad Jones, and Jamari Lattimore at inside linebacker. That's a position we really did just blow up. The best way I can describe them is they were adequate. But I think everybody's looking for some improvement there, and hopefully that means addition by subtraction. As far as re-signs, guys, we've re-signed. Honestly, I joke about free agency, but I really actually think that we won free agency. When you think about getting the best wide receiver and the best tackle in free agency at below market deals in Cobb and Bulaga that I'm referring to, I think that's a home run. It kind of gets back to what I was saying about the culture in Green Bay. We also re-signed John Kuhn, BJ Raji, Latroy Guyon. Sean Richardson was kind of interesting if you're a Packers super fan like me, because I think the Raiders offered them about $2.5 million for Sean Richardson, who we actually ended up matching that offer. He was a restricted free agent, and I just think it's a lot of money to pay somebody to play special teams. So it's interesting. I was kind of curious to see what we do with them, with him, I should say. But I'm kind of happy to see him back. I think he's got a high ceiling. He's one of those Cam Chancellor-type defensive backs if he can ever stay healthy. I think losing Tremont Williams and Devon House hurts a little bit because it leaves us really small on the outside. Both Casey Hayward, who I think they're planning on being our starting cornerback, and Micah Hyde, who is kind of a safety cornerback combo. They are both smaller, slower guys who are very good in the slot, but I don't know if they have the length to consistently challenge bigger wide receivers like a Calvin, like an Alshon Jeffries. All that being said, I don't think that either are worth the contracts they were given. So I'm kind of happy to see that we didn't try to pony up and keep one of those guys around. I think Tremont at 32 years old, got a contract averaging about $7 million a year. And House, even though he's only 25 or 26, I think he got $6.5 million, and he has never been able to string together a full season. So, you know, I'm disappointed to see that there's going to be a lot of turnover there, but at the same time, I can kind of understand it. As far as, you know, what I'm hoping to see in the next year, I'm really hoping that our second-year players will step up. You know, Richard Rodgers, quarterback claims he's got the best hands on the team, and he really started to flash kind of late in the season. It's still a relatively new position for him. He played wide receiver for his freshman through junior years of college. But one area that he definitely needs to improve, and I'm hoping to see a big jump from him, is in his run blocking. For Devontae Adams, he's another guy I'm hoping we can see a jump from year one to year two. He seemed to flash during really specific games. I don't know if it was game plan specific, but or kind of how the defenses were covering the outside wide receivers. But he really flashed during the New England game, the Dallas game, a few others. But then he'd vanish off the face of the earth for a few others. And hopefully a year of seasoning helps him kind of even things out, get a little bit more consistent on a game-in, game-out basis. And then lastly, I want to just touch on HaHa Clinton Dix. He was a godsend for us last year. We've been searching and searching for a safety to fill in for Nick Collins. And we had a couple of years there where it got really ugly. Maybe like I would call it Bears safeties ugly. But I think he's probably closer to being maxed out from a development standpoint than the others that I've already talked about. Collins from Alabama, he's got off. He played, started for us all year long. Even from the end of the year, he was referencing he doesn't feel like he's a rookie anymore. So I'm hoping we can see a little bit of an improvement from him too. I'm kind of hoping for. I'm hoping for improvement from everybody, but I'm expecting less from HaHa just because he's starting from a higher platform.
I like the fact that the Bears have set the standard for something. It's bad safety play. We won. It's Bears right. Bad, guys.
Oh, that's good stuff, Brian. Well done. Davey, what's your take on how the Vikings did this offseason?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got
Super Bowl, baby.
there's not a lot to report here. We cut Greg Jennings, which I actually think is a bigger deal than other people think. I don't think he played as bad as his numbers over the last couple of years. It's tough to put up big numbers when you've got Christian Ponder and Joe Webb and all these idiots thrown to him that can't get the ball to him. He didn't look that bad with Teddy. I thought that he was open quite a bit and not getting credit for being actually a pretty good wide receiver still that simply wasn't getting the ball delivered to him. That said, we picked up Mike Wallace, who knows? I mean, he's a quote-unquote deep threat. We'll see if that ever works out. He's supposed to be a deep threat anyway. I suppose that occasionally he is at best. I'm timidly excited about him. Who knows? He's far from Randy Moss, so we'll see. And then other than that, there's been just a lot of small moves. I mean, people want to be excited about picking up Terrence Newman because we need somebody opposite Xavier Rhodes. I'm not super hopeful that he's going to be the answer there. I'd rather draft somebody. But having a veteran on the outside is good. We re-signed Matt Asiata, which is important considering we have absolutely no idea what's going on with Adrian Peterson and probably won't until after the draft. Other than that, we got rid of Castle for some draft picks, which I think is always a good move because we like to trade in the draft and mix and match to get extra first-round picks. I mean, I think last draft we had 3 first-round draft picks, so it's always good to have some more ammo. Other than that, everything else is pretty small moves that don't really deserve a lot of airtime.
Hey, Davey, say it. Super Bowl. Super Bowl.
I'm never gonna jinx it like that. You can't get me to jinx it like that.
Come on, you're on the rise. You are. We're on a podcast. You are officially a part of the media, which means you've got to build them up.
The media, is that what you're
going
with?
Yes, that's right. You are the thing that we all hate.
I'll just keep playing my Vikings horn in the background here, and you can take it to mean whatever you want.
Come on. You have to promise that if they don't make the Super Bowl, that you'll walk naked from Minnesota to San Francisco with hot chili peppers up your rear or something.
Yeah, that seems like a really smart bet. That seems like a smart
we'll
bet.
Never
I'm gonna keep betting on the Wild, and that's the only team right now that I think I'm going to bet on.
You've got a quarterback now. Come on.
I've heard that before. I've heard that we had a quarterback before. In fact, we stole him from just around the corner in Green Bay. It worked out pretty well for us for 1 year, but we fell a bit short.
That's very reasonable, but you're ruining my fun.
Yeah, how dare you with your nuanced opinions, Davey?
Well done, Davey, and we'll keep Staham's bet in mind here as we go forward. Maybe we'll dig that up as the season goes on. Should one feel particularly cocky? Looking at the Lions off season, it wasn't until I actually prepped for this show that I realized the mass exodus that we really saw. It's remarkable. Maybe it's just the fact that I'm drowning in Honolulu Blue Kool-Aid. It was really just pulled the wool over my eyes completely. We lost Sue and Fairley, of course. Everybody knows that. We also lost our third swing tackle, C.J. Mosley. He took off. I think he's still unsigned at this moment. George Johnson just got signed away, traded now after the hubbub that went down to Tampa Bay. We lost two of our starting linemen, Rob Sims at guard and Dominic Raiola at center. And I'm pretty sure you guys loved you some Dominic Raiola, so that's going to be heartbreaking not seeing him on the field. And then Reggie Bush took off to San Francisco. But to make up for that, we got Haloti Ngata, Tyrone Walker, and I was so desperate for some kind of positivity that I included Phillip Hunt on my list. Yes, Phillip Hunt, who registered 16 sacks for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers in 2010 in the CFL, and then signed with the Eagles in 2011, 2012, didn't really do a whole lot. Tore his ACL in 2013, has been out of the league last year. But I'm still including it as a positive because, well, I need a win. We also brought back Rasheen Mathis, who has apparently found the fountain of youth and just decided not to share it with anybody, and Daryl Tapp, who's bottom of the roster, edge rusher, good enough. As far as the scheme and coaching goes, we got Terrell Austin back, which is huge. We have not had the whisper of a dominant defense in my recent memory, and then we had one last year under his tutelage. It was fantastic. As I said in the draft podcast, they're trying to go multiple. You know, they kept pressing him when they got rid of Sue and Fairley. Well, this means you're going to a 3-4. This means you're going to a 3-4. He says, we're gonna do what the situation calls for. So you can expect lots of odd fronts. Should be very interesting going forward. I like it because it allows you to plug people in with skill sets. You don't need one person that can do everything. You can just plug the proper people in the proper situation. I like it. As far as what I'm looking for this year from guys on the roster, as we touched on with the Packers, big second years out of the rookie. Ebron, please. I need to see somebody to justify that top 10 pick. Kyle Van Noy did almost nothing, and I loved him coming out of BYU. He presented so well. He looked like he could do everything. He could cover. He could rush the passer and couldn't even make the roster spot even after Tulloch went down, or couldn't even make the starting roster. And then our nickel role. I'm convinced that we got the two guys on the outside in Slay and Mathis. They should be able to hold it down pretty well, but we need somebody to step up in nickel. Bill Bentley and Nevin Lawson both had a lot of potential, both got hurt very early, so I'm hoping to see a little bit out of them. And the edge players. I mean, Ziggy Ansah has the potential to be a monster, but we need the second and third year players, Devin Taylor and Larry Webster, to step up. They're both so similar, it's scary. They're big, tall, long athletes, freaky athletes. They tested really well. They're just not polished football players. This is the year that they got to show something. Otherwise, they're not going to be long for this roster. As far as D tackle goes, I touched on it before, but Haloti Ngata, Tyrone Walker, I like them. I think they both can start. And Caron Reed, who we picked up in the fifth round last year, I think has got a lot of potential. I think he can do well as a third. As a third defensive tackle, we'll see what happens. We do need some depth there, though. James Ahedebo is scaring me as far as the defensive backfield goes. The way I understand it is he's unhappy with his contract because he's the starter, and Pro Football Focus ranked him, I believe, 20th out of all starting safeties. So he thought he deserved a little bit more of a pay bump. Then his backup, Issa Abdul-Kaddous, got re-signed to the team and is making just about as much as Hedebo is. Hedebo doesn't like that. He's not showing up for anything. At least that's a word from his agent. He's not showing up to the voluntary stuff. We'll see if he shows up to the mandatory stuff. On the offensive side of the ball, Joe Lombardi claims he's going to be opening up the offense. I feel like I hear that every year. We're going to take more chances. We're going to open up the offense a little bit. But you look at what happened last year. All Stafford stats were down. All of them. The good ones, the bad ones, they're all down. So take that for what it's worth. He says he wants to open it up. We'll see what happens. The receiver group is fairly solid with the caveat that, like I said earlier, Ebron can step up. If Ebron can be that number three pass catcher, then I think we'll be all right. Megatron is Megatron, and Golden Tate turned out to be a tremendous signing. They exceeded my expectations to a huge degree. From the running back position, I'm okay. Joik Bell is a quality runner. I've always been a fan of his, but it's becoming abundantly clear he's not a game breaker. Theo Riddick flashes some stuff. He's a great pass catcher, but he's not going to do any damage in between the tackles. You line him up, he can block a little bit. He can be a good pass catcher, but when you put him in the game, it's kind of a Darren Sproles situation. You know it's coming. And George Wynn's also on the roster. We'll see what happens. And as touched on earlier, there's a little bit of an exodus on the offensive line. Reef is there. Swanson is there. and that's about it. Larry Warford is he is going to be a stalwart. He's going to start. The two other positions are touch and go. We have LaAdrian Waddle and Cornelius Lucas. They were both in at right tackle at some point. Waddle did really well 2 years ago, but played hurt most of the year and was not a quality starter. So we'll have to see what happens there. Oh, as far as draft needs go, we need to pump up that offensive line. We need some defensive back help, and we need to strengthen the D tackle. I know you guys didn't touch on it, but a couple targets that I really like: Lael Collins, just based on versatility. The guy's a mauler. He can push people around at will. Andres Pete, which if any of our loyal listeners have listened to our draft podcast, is who I ended up taking out of Stanford. Malcolm Brown out of Texas for some of that defensive tackle help. He could probably start next to Nada, and then we could allow Tyrone Walker to kind of roam, play in some heavy packages, that kind of stuff. Quentin Rollins, who I took with our second round pick, is a tremendous athlete, 1 year of football experience. I think the upside there is incredible. And Michael Bennett out of Ohio State as a penetrating pseudo three technique, a defensive tackle who's just a disruptor, I think could be a good one.
Yeah, Andres Pete would be a great pick. I've heard a lot of people rave about him. I've heard people claim he's top 10. So if you got him, that'd be pretty good, I think.
Yeah,
I haven't watched video of him myself. Go ahead.
Oh, absolutely. And then, you know, I'll finally feel good about it. You know, I'll read some stuff. I'll watch some things. I'll feel good about my pick. It's like, man, we got a steal there. That's a good pick. And then the next article I read is no offensive lineman spends more time on the ground than Andres Pete. He gets beaten like a drum against mediocre competition, and it'll be interesting.
I don't know if you caught it, but the Atlanta superfan came on late last week, and it was right after Todd McShay and Mel Kiper did a live mock draft, and they alternated taking picks. And Tim took Vic Beasley at number 8, right behind the Bears. And he goes, what the heck? Kiper and McShay went through the whole first round, and Beasley dropped completely out of the round. So now I look like an idiot. So it's going to be interesting to see where he goes, actually. But for the record, Tim, you're not an idiot. I think most people have Vic Beasley going pretty high. We'll find out. But I know exactly what you're talking about. You read another article and you think, oh God, I blew my pick. What the heck, you know?
Well, let's take this opportunity. What do you guys think as far as maybe your top three prospects for your teams? This, you know, we all did that mock draft. We know about where we're picking, who should and shouldn't be available. Any guys you're falling in love with? We'll start with Tom.
Okay. Oh, well, love. Well, I love Jameis Winston, but we're not going to have a shot at him. not many people will say that. I guess I don't love him too much, but I would put up with the off-field stuff because I really like what I see there. In terms of realistic possibilities, I don't think Leonard Williams will be there. I don't think Fowler will drop to us, but they would do bat flips all the way to the front of the stage if they could get him. Dante Fowler. Marcus Mariota, I'm not convinced will drop that far, but it is not completely impossible. And if he dropped them at 7, it would be very interesting to see what they did. I do not think they would take him, but I know that they must be very tempted. And what they do at quarterback in this draft is going to tell you a lot about what they really think about Jay Cutler. Amari Cooper and Kevin White are both really good possibilities. There's a good chance that one of those will be there. And if that happens, it's going to present another interesting scenario. Again, during our mock draft, I learned something really interesting when Andrew, the Jets super fan, wanted to trade back, and he was in front of me at number 6. And what he basically told everybody, all 32 GMs, was he was taking White, and Amari Cooper was already off the board. And he said, if you want Kevin White, you got to come up and trade with me because I'm taking him. And I think if Kevin White or Cooper drop to 7, that there'll be a market for that pick, and the Bears could very well trade back. I think Miami would like to come up. I think the Rams might like to come up. I think there's a possibility even Cleveland might come up for a wide receiver. So It will be very interesting if White gets that far. Wide receiver is not a big need for the Jets. Andrew took him anyway, but I don't think the Jets in reality really will, and I wonder how many teams will believe that they really will. So that's a scenario that I'm really looking forward to. Having said that, of the good pass rushers that are there, Vic Beasley, Randy Gregory, Bud Dupree, and Shane Ray, the only one I really like is Randy Gregory. The off-field problem is a big problem. He's a risky pick. I went with the draft with Danny Shelton, who I really like. I think he's a difference maker. To make a long story short, a lot of people believe he's a two-down run stopper that will sit as a blob of fat in the middle of the defense as a nose tackle. I believe he is more than that. I have watched video of him, and I like what I see. He's quick. He gets off blocks like grease. I think he's going to provide some pass rush. I think he's going to be more than just a two-down run stopper, and I love him as a pick at number 7 if they decide to go in that direction. Historically, very, very nice. Yeah, historically, Fox has gone with a pass rusher. Ryan Pace has gone with the wide receiver. We'll wait and see what happens. I like the nose tackle. I think they're tough to find.
Very nice. Brian, how about you, sir? Any picks you're falling in love with that you're just crying for them to make it to Green Bay?
I honestly don't think there is a person I would say that I've fallen in love with. In our mock draft, I took the cornerback out of LSU, Jalen Collins. It's hard to love a guy when you've only seen him play 10 games. There's just not that many highlights of him. And this being a draft that's, you know, somewhat shallow from what you hear the talking heads talk about, they say maybe there's 10, 15 guys that'll go in the first round, and then there's a big group of second round guys that are going to end up going in the first, but end up, or if they were in another draft, they might go closer to the second round. So I've tended to focus more on the players that I think we have a realistic shot of getting at positions that I think we might be drafting for. So I tended to focus a lot more on the defensive side since the offense is going to be returning everybody and their backups. So guys that I genuinely like, I really like Kevin Johnson's game. He is a little bit on the small side, but he doesn't play that way. He fills in run support, no problem, and doesn't seem to shy away from contact. Like I said, Jalen Collins has got oodles of potential, that LSU cornerback factory that we've seen in recent years. So I think you could do a lot worse than picking there. Otherwise, I focused a lot on the inside linebackers because I really see that as one of our most pressing needs. So I've watched a little bit of tape on all of those guys. Tape, I should say, YouTube highlights. You know, I think Kendricks sounds like he's the best of the bunch. He's got the ability to cover, and he plays that inside linebacker role at UCLA. So he'd be a guy. The guy, from, you're just going off of the highlight reels, you got to love Denzel Perryman. Just hits like a ton of bricks and seems to always be in the right place at the right time. I think he's a little bit small, and, you know, he lacks some of the tangibles that you'd want out of a first-round pick, but I'd be psyched if we could get him. Then the only other guy I can think of that kind of doesn't fit into one of those buckets that I also really just genuinely like watching is Philip Dorsett out of Miami. And I don't think it's necessarily somebody that we would target in the draft or anything. I just think he's going to be a difference maker at the next level with just how agile and explosive he is in and out of his cuts.
Very,
you know,
nice.
I was just a quick comment about the fact that I was looking at an article on the ESPN website, and Scouts Inc. Put all the players down that they had grades on and put them in rounds from 1 through 7, and they only had 20 first rounders. So that goes right along with what you said about the first round. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens there. I don't know, maybe people will trade up to try to get a legitimate first rounder in those first 20 picks.
But yeah, that's what I was going to say is, you know, it's looking at our roster, you would tend to think there's that potential. We don't have that many holes to fill, so why not fill the ones we do have with really high quality players? But, you know, you never know with Ted, and he seems more than happy to sit back and take the best player available. And then a year from now, you look back and say, wow, that was a really brilliant pick. So, yeah, I will say that I did plan to take off of work on Friday so I could enjoy the first round, which almost assuredly means that Ted Thompson will trade out of the first.
Of course, of course. Davey, Do you have any picks in this draft that you're just itching to make it to your Vikings?
Hell yeah, Vic Beasley. Let's get him to draft. It's never going to happen, but he's awesome. There's no chance that he falls off that far, but who knows? Maybe that's how we mix Adrian Peterson trade into the mix. I would love to see Vic Beasley and Anthony Barr and Mike Zimmer all working together to make our defense back on top. We used to have a pretty good one a couple years ago, and it's fallen apart very quickly. So it'd be great to see another awesome defensive end slash linebacker kind of Anthony Barr type player working with Zimmer and see what they can do. Other than that, though, since that's super unrealistic, I like the boring picks. I like the linemen. Give me another tackle, a Brandon Scherff, something like that. Eric Flowers. Hopefully, one of these guys falls far enough that we can just shore up our line. Find a way to put them in there. Our offensive line on paper is better than it is in practice, and we need to fix that. Those picks I like better because it makes everybody else better. It helps Teddy. It helps our mediocre wide receivers, and that's pretty much it. A lot of people in Minnesota want a wide receiver. I still have hopes that Patterson can figure it out, and even if he doesn't, Johnson looked awesome and he came out of nowhere. And I think in general, if you have a good line and a good quarterback, you don't really need a good receiver. I think the Patriots and the Packers and all these people have proved that good line, good quarterback, and that's pretty much it. So, you know, let's not waste our time with drafting receivers for decades like the Lions and the Raiders.
Easy.
And let's go after something better.
That actually leads us pretty well into our last segment that we're calling Just One Question. If you've been listening to the podcast, you've seen this. Each one of us super fans are going to issue a question to each of the other super fans. I'll go ahead and lead things off with you, Davey, since you kind of led right into it. Where do you see Charles Johnson fitting into this offense long term? And what do you consider his ceiling? Is it safe to say that he's firmly overtaken Patterson? Would you see him as the number one, number two? What do you think?
Yeah. Where do I see him in terms of ceiling? I hope he hasn't reached his ceiling, but I'm fearing that he has. I mean, it's hard to think that he hasn't, right? Like, he came out of nowhere and no one thought he'd be this good. So it's nice to be a fan and hope that he's going to be better than he was last year, but he's probably not going to be. I don't know that he's, I mean, on paper, he's definitely overtaken Patterson. Patterson can't run a route. That's clear. But he'll be given another chance this year to take it over. I think Patterson's got way more raw talent. If that means anything, then he's got a chance to be better than Johnson. But overall, I think that he's going to fit into the offense, right now as the starter opposite Wallace. So we'll see how that goes. I think Patterson is on the last chance opportunity here to jump back in the mix. You know, he's supposed to be the one. So we'll see.
Brian, my next question is for you. After all the wide receivers the Packers let walk in free agency over the years, they've embraced that next man up mentality for the young players. Why do you think they were willing to pay such big money to both Nelson and Randall Cobb? Do you see this as a lack of faith in some of the other pass catchers like Davante Adams?
I would say to a certain extent, yes. I think if you would have seen a more consistency and more production out of Davante Adams, you might not have been willing to pay Randall Cobb, who is, he's making top dollar for a slot receiver, basically. But I don't necessarily look at us as paying huge money to Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb. I think Nelson's contract average is about $9 million. Same with Cobb. He might be a little bit higher than that. But I think that's kind of par for the course. You know, Ted always likes to keep his own guys. Those were two guys that are still very young. I think Randall Cobb came into the league when he was only 20 years old, so I think he's only about 24. Actually, we picked up a wide receiver in the draft last year, Jared Aberderis, who's actually older than Randall Cobb. So I think when you look at some of the previous defections that we've had, Greg Jennings and James Jones and Donald Driver specifically, I think a lot of those guys left. We could have paid them fairly nominal contracts to keep them around, but I think that was partially done because we planned on paying Nelson and Cobb. So, maybe we wouldn't be quite so willing to bend for Randall Cobb or kind of spend our money on him if we had seen number one wide receiver talent out of Davante Adams last year. But honestly, when you talk about some of the articles I read anyway talk about how Ron Wolf's biggest regret were not giving Brett Favre enough weapons. And I think Ted Thompson, being an understudy of Ron Wolf, is trying to learn from that mistake and just keep the covers very well stocked for our MVP quarterback.
Very nice, very nice. And Tom, my last question is for you. What are your thoughts on the firing of Mark Trestman? I only say this because in the limited exposure we had to him, he actually provided a pretty good spark to your offense, specifically the quarterbacks, with his quarterback guru background. Everyone except Jay Cutler. I mean, he made Josh McCown a wealthy man. He made a lot of money off Mark Trestman. And that one game you referred to earlier with Jimmy Clausen was against us, and he looked confident until I think it was Sue kind of spiked his head in the ground and gave him a concussion. What are your opinions on the Trestman firing?
Well, when Trestman was hired, I confess I loved the hire. I mean, I really did. When the Bears look around, they really look pretty much toward the Packers as the template for success. It kills me to say that, but It's pretty much true. And when you look at their coaching staff, they always seem to have a lot of quarterback coaches on the staff. McCarthy's a quarterback coach. You know, Clements is the offensive coordinator now, but he was a quarterback coach. What do you have, Van Pelt now, a quarterback coach, a real coach? So I think the quarterback is the key to the modern game. And if you can hire a head coach who's good with quarterbacks, I figured you're in like Flint. So I thought it was a great hire. And you're right. He did a good job with quarterbacks here. And I would add, by the way, I think he did a good job with everyone. I really did. The problem with Trestman, even with Cutler looked competent in games against average teams. It was when he got up against good teams, especially good teams in primetime, that you saw the shoulders slump and you saw him give up. I mean, he's got a problem. I mean, it's an attitude problem that I don't think you can coach out of him. And I hope John Fox and Adam Gase are going to figure that out. But that's just my opinion. You never know. He might do okay this year. I have to allow for that. I've been more surprised. But even with Cutler, I thought that Trestman did a good job. The problem is that he's a coordinator, not a head coach. And I didn't see that coming. Turns out that's the way he is. He's Wade Phillips. He's Norv Turner. You know, these are guys that are really, really good coordinators that maybe just aren't cut out to be head coaches. So I saw him go to Baltimore. I think that was a good move for him. I think that Baltimore will benefit. And as long as he doesn't have to be the head guy that establishes the tone and mets out the discipline, that he'll be in a good spot. So that's how I feel about it. I think he just wasn't head coaching material, but that doesn't mean he's a bad coach.
Well done, sir. And Tom, you were the last one to speak. Why don't you go ahead and give your just one question?
All right. So I took a little bit of a different tack with this segment. I looked around the division, and just like a typical fan, I looked at the names down the list as I went down the standings, and I saw Lions, pretty scary team, you know, nice scary logo. I saw Vikings, you know, Raiders up and down the English coast, terrors of the Middle Ages. I saw Bears, big, heavy, hairy, you know, Bears, scary, people run from a bear, they run from Brian Urlacher. And then I saw Packers. One of these names does not fit. So my question for Ryan is, what kind of a name for a team is Packers? And should you start a petition to change the name to something better?
Very nice, Tom. Very nice. So what? Like the Packers just doesn't strike fear to the heart?
What am I, a vegetarian? I mean, am I supposed to be afraid?
So to answer your question, I would never consider changing our name. It's, you know, we've had the same name forever. We've had the same jersey, the same logo. Everything's been the same. It's not something I would ever consider. I think, you know, if you want a history lesson, we can go back. And I think it's back in the 20s or something. The Acme Packing Company, or maybe it was the Indian Packing Company at the time. We needed money for new equipment, and they gave us $500 and have enjoyed free advertising for basically a century since then. So I don't necessarily think of it as terrifying unless you know what our roster is made up of, and everybody here does. So unless we really fall off and you just kind of need to shake up the culture a little bit, and even then.
So if they opened up a Nabisco factory in Green Bay, would you let them name the team the Keebler Elves?
That's a little bit different story.
Well, it's not, admittedly, it's not as bad as Packers, but it's not as good as the Red Vipers.
That being true, I still would never consider that.
The Green Bay Red Vipers, don't you think that's cool?
It is cool, I will give you that, but I don't know, there's something to be said for the history of the game, and us, and the Bears too. You should know this, Tom. Would you ever consider changing your name? Not that it's scary. Except
to the Red Vipers, I would consider it. Not for very long, but I would consider it.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's interesting, even the Packers, they're kind of stuck in their ways. I think last year, 2 years ago, Nike introduced a bunch of new uniforms to the league, new design, new material. The Packers were the only team to say, nope, we don't want to change it. Keep it the same. We don't care if it doesn't breathe as well. This is what we want, and this is what we're going to stick with.
Yeah, based upon what they've done to Oregon, I'd say you guys made the right choice.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so let's see. My question for Davey. So I was reading an article, I think it was in the Pioneer Press the other day, about a new offensive tackle named Babatunde Ayegbisi, which from here on out will be Babby Alphabet. And
he goes by Babs. I'm going to call him Babs.
Yeah, he's coming over from Poland, and that's the only time I've read a name where I wished in my heart that it was a Polish name, because it'd be easier to pronounce. So this guy was being interviewed in a bar, and a sports bar, and he was getting his first taste of chicken wings and nachos and all kinds of neat stuff. And I know a few Europeans. I work with a lot of Europeans that have moved to America, and they always talk about the American diet and how much weight they gain. And as a matter of fact, I had a graduate student who came from Spain. And after 6 months here, he was the fattest vegetarian I have ever seen. His first cheese pizza was the end of him. So I want to know how much Davey thinks this guy's going to weigh by the time training camp starts.
Just by the time training camp starts, not too much time from now. Huh? He's 351 right now at 6'9". So that said, I think we should set the over-under at 370 and see what everybody thinks. 370
over
would be
good. Give me the over.
You're going to go over, huh?
I'll take the over.
You'll take the over? And are we going with your bet about running naked to San Francisco? Is that the deal?
Only if you still do it. That was if you did it.
Oh, okay. I thought that was just if you get this one wrong.
I'll bet you a sandwich. You come to Chicago for the draft, and I'll buy you a sandwich.
All right. Yeah, that would be nice. No, I would bet the over as well, probably on 370. But you know, it's going to be somewhere close to that. I'd like to see him try to keep it down though, because it seems fun to have just a massive giant there. Although I worry that, you know, Teddy won't be able to throw it over this guy's head if he gets, you know, just too big. He's just going to be a wall in the middle of the line. It's just ridiculous.
Okay, well, my last question is for Adam. And now, for those of you who don't know, we were scheduled to do this podcast on Thursday night. And I was ready. Brian was ready. Davey was ready. But where was Adam? And it turned out Adam had a flat tire, and he was driving a car which was not made in the United States and does not provide a spare tire. So my question for Adam is, what would the Lions say if they knew that Mr. Superfan, Mr. Motor City, is going to marry a Hyundai owned by his fiance that doesn't provide a spare tire?
Oh, well, I didn't think this is the actual question that was going to get asked. This is fun. Okay.
It's on the rundown. It's right there.
I had some choice words on the side of the highway for said corporation. A punctured tire is an easy enough fix. I've used Fix-A-Flat many a times in my day. Just pump the can of goop in there, run it a little bit, spins the stuff to the outside, plugs the hole, you're golden. That doesn't do a whole lot of good when your tire is slashed from some obstruction in the roadway. It did nothing, so it turned what should have been a quick hop out and change the tire into a three-hour venture, including a tow truck and a tire company who really didn't like us for coming in so close to their closing time. I do apologize to anyone who planned on our show that it was not there. As far as anything I would have to say for the city of Detroit and other Lions fans, I apologize. This was not my choice of vehicle. Believe me, I drive a Detroit-made vehicle, and another one will not be purchased. Please do not send the UAW after me. I love my family. I don't want to not come back to them one day.
So my first response to this was, you shouldn't marry this girl. Dump her until she gets a new car. Yeah. But I have to tell you, I have to tell you, Adam, I was creeping. I mean, visiting your Facebook page, and I'm looking at your picture, and I have to say, you did pretty well for yourself here. So I think I'd live without the spare tire.
I appreciate that. I agree. Tell
her I said that. Maybe I'll get on her good side.
All right. Well, being that last names are included in this, you can bet she's going to have a couple barbs heading your way, sir. All right. Well, enough personal prying. We can jump to Brian. Brian, what do you have to say in our one question segment?
Yeah, sure. Let me start by asking Tom a question. Basically, you know, to my eye, Jay Cutler is an average to sometimes above average quarterback in a league that just doesn't have enough guys for all 32 teams. Contract being what it is, I think there are, you know, maybe 10 or 12 other teams that would rather have Jay Cutler than their own quarterback. So what would you do with Jay?
Okay. So what I would do with Jay and what the team has done with Jay are different things. The team has decided to ride it out with him because you can look around and you can see that the free agent crop wasn't the best. And the draft beyond the top two, which will likely be gone before number seven, is not the best either. I disagree. I see what you guys see. I do not think Jay Cutler is ever going to win a big game. He's not a big game quarterback. I don't think we are destined to win a playoff game with him at quarterback ever again. And I think when you have determined that that is the case, that you have to start looking for your new quarterback as soon as possible. And sometimes that means rolling the dice and going with somebody that isn't ideal on the off chance that you catch lightning in a bottle. Because the earlier you start your search, the more likely it is that you find the guy that you really need. And if Cutler's not your guy, and I think most of Chicago, most of the NFL has agreed that Cutler's not the Bears guy, then I say that you dump that contract and you get whatever you can for it. You go with somebody else at quarterback. And, you know, there were decent options available, not great options, not options that are as physically talented as Cutler. Guys like Fitzpatrick were available, you know, but Matt Moore is still available. And you never quite know. What's his name in Tampa Bay, the guy who's soon to be the backup quarterback? You know, you make a decent offer to them. You know, you never know. You might be able to pick him up. So I say, you know, you give it a shot with someone else. And if you end up being worse off for a year, well, you know, that's the way it goes. At least you got started early with your search. As it is right now, I think they're sort of sitting in limbo. And I'm looking for them to draft a quarterback. And if they don't draft one, then I'm going to be disappointed because it's going to be an indication that they're going to be sticking with Cutler for more than this year. And all this, you know, well, not sounding too thrilled with him is just a motivational ploy, which is entirely possible. So we'll just have to wait and see. I think most coaches, they're arrogant. And somewhere deep inside, they think they see the physical talent and they think they can fix them. Cutler's been here for 6 years. He's beyond fixing. They're not going to be able to turn him into somebody who's going to beat a really good team, who when the team is up against it and the breaks are beating the boys is going to be there to win one for the Gipper. He's going to be the guy that's going to be sitting in the back of the boat with the anchor in his lap while everybody else is bailing. So I would have rather seen them get rid of him and start over, even if it was somebody who was less than ideal at the position. They didn't see it that way. We'll have to wait and see what happens.
All right, great. Next up, we'll go to Adam. So you referenced it a little bit earlier, kind of the defensive turnover. What are you expecting from the defense this year? I'm thinking, you know, you guys finally were able to put something together last year where you kind of had a defense that was very good against the run, very good against the pass, where that's not really been the case for the last couple of decades that I've been watching football. So what do you expect from the defense this year, given that turnover?
Well, I referenced earlier that there's a symptom of being a Lions fan for as long as I have is you kind of force yourself to drink the Kool-Aid at every turn. This is the year. This is the year we're going to put it all together. So again, this may be just me drowning in Honolulu Blue Kool-Aid, but I am crossing my fingers and saying there might not be that big of a drop-off. I think the run defense might see a little bit of a drop-off because of the players we lost right in the middle. Sue is obviously a tremendous player, and you can't get anybody in the league that can replicate what he can do in both the run and pass defense aspect of the game. But one of the things that goes underappreciated is just how good Nick Fairley was at chewing up blocks. As far as double teams go, he played that one technique more often than not, and he could swallow up two blocks without letting them get to the second level and let either Stephen Tulloch or Tahir Whitehead, whoever was playing middle linebacker at the time, run to the ball, which I think really helped the run defense. Now, that being said, Nada is no slouch when it comes to that, but I don't know if Nada and Walker are going to be as good as Sue and Fairley were. Our linebacker core is more or less unmolested, so they should be okay from a production standpoint. And assuming James Ahedibo doesn't kick and scream too much regarding his contract situation, the defensive backfield should be okay as well. So again, this may just be me drowning in Honolulu Blue Kool-Aid, but I think we should be okay. I think a top 10 defense isn't out of the realm of possibility, but we'll have to see how that pans out.
All right. Sounds great. Last question is for Davey. It's kind of a joke actually, around Green Bay.
I was actually just told by Davey that his phone died as we were speaking. He was down to 1% with the last thing that he said. So Davey is actually off of the podcast.
That's too bad. I had this great question for him all teed up asking about Green Bay's JV team out west, but I guess he's not even going to be here to defend himself.
It is a good one. I think we might have to hang on to that one for next time. Yeah. That is quality material.
Right. Well, just generally referencing the number of players that go from Green Bay to Minnesota. So
I'll answer for Davey. I think it's Packer envy. I think they worship Green Bay, and I think, you know, they pretty much figure, well, if they played for the Green Bay, they must be better than being a Viking, so we'll make them Vikings. How's that?
I'm sure that's probably exactly what Davey would have said.
That was my goal.
All right, gentlemen. Well, this has been fantastic. Again, this is the Next Fan Up podcast. I mentioned it earlier, but you can email us anytime at nextfanup@gmail.com. Get in touch with us on Twitter at NFU Podcast and facebook.com/NFU Podcast. Gentlemen, any way you'd like the listeners to get a hold of you, Twitter handles, anything like that you'd like to throw out, starting with you, Tom?
I am on Twitter at tshanno, T-S-H-A-N-N-O, without the N, because that one was taken. And you can also find me at www.bearingthenews.com.
Very nice. How about you, Brian?
I'm not a huge Twitter guy. I do have an account, though, so if anybody wants to get in touch with me, they can reach me at bslatt, B-S-L-A-T-T-T, three T's, because nice. The one with two T's was taken.
I love it, right?
I find that hard to believe.
And my Twitter handle is bringitall2244@gmail.com. I'm sorry, bringitall2244. Happy to interact with anybody who'd like to. And I think I speak for the guys when we're fanatical about our teams and we're happy to talk to anybody that also is. That's why this podcast lasted an hour and 40 minutes. We appreciate everybody listening. We'll catch you next week.